Chapter 25, Return to the Valley. General Jeremy led the 10 travelers out of the slave camp the following morning. The king couldn't afford any more troops for protection, but General Jeremy grinned in acknowledgement of Narayana's observation that they could defend themselves. The 4 prior prophecy heroes were still weakened from their years of captivity, but their spirits seemed to improve by the hour. Returning to the cave valley felt like one step closer to reaching Earth. Stavius and Janice remembered how frightened they were when they left on this journey to Septumgalus and laughed at how little the trip back concerned them. Their only regret was that General Jeremy refused to take them anywhere near Equus. Unicorns and Lachians evidently did not get along well, which wasn't surprising given the Lachians' attitude toward magic. Another reason for avoiding their original route was that it was more likely to be patrolled by Septumgalum raiding parties than the other paths. General Jeremy led them due east, past their original course to Septumgalus, before turning south around lunchtime. They spent the first 2 days traveling through forested hills. The rises weren't steep, but the group felt as though they were always walking slightly uphill, downhill, or around hills. The terrain began to flatten toward the end of the second day, and they camped in a meadow covered in leaves surrounded by tall, bare poplar trees. The weather was quite frigid, and the group huddled together in the 4 large, lightweight tents Prisera had fashioned before they left. There was very little magic out here, but her triple dragonstone tattoos provided enough magical energy to power these simple enhancements. They saw no predators and few animals of any sort, even though the leafless trees and bushes provided ample visibility. Smaller animals were frightened away, and even larger predators chose to avoid the large group. The group made good time the next day over the flatlands, leaving at sunup and setting camp at sundown. General Jeremy noted that there had recently been a forest fire through these parts, and the boys realized this was near where they had encountered the werewolves on their journey north. They shared the story of the werewolf attack, and the image of those wolves running away holding their flaming butts left everyone laughing. Janice cast a glance at Stavius, though, and they both remembered how frightening it was when it happened. They had all changed over the past several months, and the kids starting out to fulfill a prophecy seemed like different people than the heroes returning to the valley. None of them could remember their lives before coming to Mirth. The werewolf story also made Stavius and Janice realize that the group would be crossing the grasslands tomorrow. They both shivered at the terrifying memories of that day's travel. The girls, however, said that the boys were just being big babies. After all, they had walked the same route as prisoners tied to the back of a wagon. The boys countered that traveling in a large group, even as prisoners, was far less dangerous than hiking in a group of 3. Tara reminded them that this wasn't a competition, but no one seemed to hear her as they stomped off to their various tents. They crossed the river just after dawn and reached the edge of the grasslands by mid-morning. The group had rejoined the main route, which made General Jeremy unhappy, but there was no other reasonable path. Stavius and Janice were confused, however. They had stood on this hillock at the northern edge of the grasslands before, but the view looked different. They realized that the season had changed, and the grasses were now brown and brittle rather than green, but there was another significant difference as well. The narrow path through the tall grasses was much broader than they remembered. The girls laughed and attributed it to the faulty memories of the 2 frightened little boys, but General Jeremy had a different opinion. He looked at the broken grasses and stated that a large group of people had recently passed through here. The reason became clear when Elisa stubbed her toe on something lying under the trampled grasses around midday. She had found a canteen matching the type carried by Septumgalan soldiers. A Septumgalan regiment had marched toward the cave valley sometime after the boys traveled this path. General Jeremy assured the group that the grass had been trampled several weeks ago, but recommended that they hurry through and double their guard tonight. They had one more night of camping on the road before reaching the valley, and he wanted to be prepared for any surprises. That night, they camped in the same location Stavius, Janice, and Bernice had used on their first night on the road. It had been a long day, but no one was able to go to sleep for quite a while. They all silently sat on the edge of the hill, looking across the grasslands they had just traversed. Stavius broke the silence by saying, "There's something we need to discuss before we arrive at the valley tomorrow. There's a Septumgalum spy in the valley." This sparked a heated discussion about him being paranoid until Janice explained what happened at the Septumgalus Bridge. The guards should have been searching for one missing 13-year-old prophecy hero. However,
The families were expecting two travelers and knew Stavius's unusual age. Espionage was the only possibility. He added that a spy would also explain why heroes were captured so frequently.
Narayana suspected Urtish, and most of the group agreed. Stavius wasn't so confident and said that while Urtish was obnoxious, he didn't seem like a traitor. Tara, however, vehemently disagreed, and Janice gave Stavius a worried look. Janice said, "I get that nobody really likes Urtish, but there seems to be something more between the two of you. What happened?" Tara stared into the distance for a while before replying, "We were both prophecy heroes 30 years ago. It should be evident that our team failed, but what you don't know is that Urtish and I are the only two who survived. We had a strong team, which was nearly as good as you, and we had an excellent plan, but things started to go wrong and we got in trouble. I think we could have found a way to make it work if we had been more adaptable, but Urtish refused to deviate from the plan and we continued down a path to disaster. I am not sure how I managed to escape with my life. I even thought I was a sole survivor until I found Urtish when I returned here at age 17. I should have known that coward would find a way to sneak out while our friends perished. He was probably somewhere sneaking a sandwich instead of being at his post." Stavius had never seen Tara this agitated. She was ordinarily calm and sensible, but her whole body was shaking by the time she finished. Tara realized she had lost control and became silent as she struggled to regain her composure. We sat in stunned silence for several minutes until our thoughts were broken by a voice from behind.
"I can't believe I've been traveling with such a sorry group of pathetic whiners," exclaimed General Jeremy. "Y'all have broken out of prison, escaped being eaten by dragons, stolen 4 talismans, destroyed bridges and castles, and beaten the snot out of a mess of Septunculans, and yet y'all are whining like a bunch of losers. Tomorrow, y'all should march into that valley like the heroes y'are. And in a few months, we're going to be marching to victory in Septunculus. Now get yourself to bed and get some shut-eye. We ain't made it to that thar valley yet, and in case y'all forgot, we got us some big hills to climb before we get thar."
Janice silently stood up and walked away, but everyone else laughed, and Narayana even stood up to salute the general and say, "Yes, sir!" The group followed General Jeremy's advice, except for Stavius, who went to look for Janice. He found him sitting alone in the darkness down the hill and silently joined him. Janice was staring at the stars and wistfully said, "Remember looking up at the constellation Orion from right here and wondering how Earth and Mirth are related? That seems like it was a lifetime ago." "Yeah, it does. What's bugging you, Janice?" asked Stavius. Janice was usually the troublemaker, not the melancholy thinker.
"Did you ever really think that we might actually pull this whole prophecy thing off?" Janice asked. "Because I didn't."
Stavius thought about that question for a while before saying, "I guess I kind of did when this all started, and it seemed like some sort of make-believe grand adventure. I changed my mind after I found out about people dying or going into comas. After that, I simply wanted to rescue the girls and maybe find the previous heroes. But now, I guess I kind of think we might be able to do it. We might be able to fulfill both our prophecy to score the talismans and the Latian prophecy to defeat the Septunculums. Am I crazy or what?"
"No, I've been feeling the same way," answered Janice. "But I won't be coming with you to battle the Septunculums. And I shouldn't have come with you before. Urtish was right. I'm not a hero. My place is back in the valley. I've let all of you down."
"What are you talking about?" Stavius exclaimed. "I'd be dead without you, and there's no way we would have freed the girls, escaped from King Ringheld's guards, or even stolen the talismans without you. What has gotten into you?"
"You're right, but none of this makes any difference now that we're really trying to fulfill the prophecy," sighed Janice before correcting himself. "Except for saving your life. That does matter," he added with a chuckle.
"Thanks, much appreciated. Now, would you please explain why you are so glum?" repeated Stavius.
Janice sighed and said, "Let's suppose we succeed in acquiring all 7 talismans. What happens then?" Stavius answered, "Well, the prophecy seems to say that we'll save the world or restore magic or something. I'm not really sure, but I am sure it's a good thing."
"Right, and how exactly is that supposed to happen?"
asked Janice. Stavius mumbled, I'm not really sure. I guess I never thought much about it.
Of course you don't know. You aren't supposed to know. You're all heroes. The only person who's supposed to know is the key, and that's me. But I don't know. I've been acting like a hero for the past 6 months instead. I should have been spending my time figuring out what to do with the talismans, but I failed. I have one job, and I haven't been doing it.
Janice was beginning to sniffle, and Stavius put his arm around him.
What am I going to do? I have no idea how we're supposed to use the talismans to save the world, and absolutely no idea how to figure it out, the boy whimpered.
Stavius softly soothed him by saying, I don't know how we're going to figure that out, Janice, but I do know one thing. We're going to figure it out together. I have your back. They heard Narayana agree. Forget about what old Ertish says about the rules. Team Stavius Mirth Division sticks together. Stavius and Janice spun around in surprise to see Narayana, Forsera, and Elisa standing behind them. Stavius groaned. So Nancy knows what my friends and I used to call ourselves. Narayana laughed.
Yeah, and it was an excellent idea to try to keep that lame name a secret.
Forsera added, you really are pathetic with naming things. I still grimace whenever I hear the word mirth, and now everyone seems to use it. I swear, you are evil. All the tension of the long day broke, and everyone suddenly found themselves laughing. Janice smiled and said, thanks, guys. I think I'll be able to go to sleep now without worrying about blowing our only chance to save the world.
Elisa said, that was what was keeping you awake?
I was more worried about the 100 Septumclum soldiers who marched this way a few weeks ago. Everyone just stared at her. She stared back and added, well, they apparently went into the valley, but it doesn't look like they came out. Where do you think they are?
Thank you so much for pointing that out, Elisa. I was so looking forward to being able to go to sleep, groaned Stavius.
General Jeremy was right about the steep hills. They left before dawn, but it took until dinner time to reach the cave valley's magic pool. They were exhausted from their day's long climb. The group saw the plants brighten and become denser, and several of the heroes were now also able to directly see the magical energy. They searched for sentries as they cautiously proceeded along the path leading into the valley. Forsera eluded an invisibility screen around them, which wasn't perfect but might give them a second or two of advantage over a bored and sleepy sentry. The last quarter mile took nearly an hour with all these precautions, but in the end, they did not see anyone, nor did it appear that anyone saw them. They crested the hill and saw the valley below as they neared the cave entrance. The place was devastated. The bridge and the village were in ruins. Boar's precious tournament field was a war-torn mud pit. Most of the trees were little more than smoldering stumps, but the strangest part was the emptiness. The valley was empty, blackened, and shrouded in smoke, containing no living people or bodies. They studied the valley for several minutes while theorizing what had become of both the residents and the invaders in hushed whispers. The haze of smoke covering the valley floor was probably due to a conflagration caused by the battle, but there was also smoke wafting out of the cave entrance, which made no sense. The cave was the most logical place to find survivors, but the smoke was a mystery because, other than the Lachians, the people of Mirth had no need of fire. They used magic for heat, light, and cooking. They worshipped the planet as the embodiment of Terra and would not willingly set their god on fire. General Jeremy finally decided that the cave had to be inspected. Everyone drew their weapons and began creeping toward the entrance.
I wouldn't get too close to that cave if I were you, came a deep voice from behind.
They spun around to see a gigantic warrior standing behind them. It was Boar, the military trainer. Forsera dropped her bow and raced to give her old teacher a hug.
Boar, it is so great to see you. What happened here? Where is everybody? Narayana asked as they crowded around him.
Boar grinned at Forsera, Narayana, and Elisa before extending his arm out to Stavius and saying,
I knew you could do it, man. I just knew it.
Then he saw the others, and recognition flashed across his face.
Wait, are these the heroes from 6 years ago? He asked Stavius, and the boy's grin answered his question.
Oh, you are a sight for sore eyes. Even you, Janice, Boar said with a laugh.
But what happened here? Where is everybody?
asked General Jeremy.
Captain Jeremy, you old dog, is that really you? Asked Bor.
In the flesh, but it's General Jeremy now, Bor,
answered the general as they clasped arms.
Looks like a regiment of Septumcles came this way. Are you all right?
Yes, you're right that the Septumcles attacked, but we're all fine, except for a few minor scrapes and bruises. The village was forced to move farther down the valley after the invasion, though, began Bor. About 75 Septumcles flooded into the valley 2 weeks ago, but they were not prepared for what was waiting for them. We've been training for battle all our lives, and we knew they were coming long before they arrived.
It turns out that we had a spy in our midst for years, which is why so many heroes have been captured.
We didn't figure out who it was until after you left, but we kept an eye on her once we knew and were ready for the attack. The heroes looked at each other and mouthed,
"Her?"
But Bor kept talking before they could interrupt with their questions.
Those poor soldiers thought they had the element of surprise and the high ground, but I doubt the battle lasted an hour. Let's just leave it that they fought bravely but are no longer with us.
Stavius was confused. But if the Septumcles invasion was an easy victory, what destroyed everything in the valley, and why is everyone in hiding?
And what about the other Septumcles? Added General Jeremy. There were tracks for far more than 75 troops heading this way.
Well, I don't know anything about more troops, but the destruction was due to the dragons, sighed Bor.
Wait, dragons?
Frisera, Narayana, and Elisa said in unison.
Yeah, a family of those monsters arrived not 2 days later, torched everything, and moved into the cave. We were forced to abandon the valley and have been too terrified to come back since they arrived. Ritish and I come up here every day to keep a lookout for another force, but most of the time I just sit here hoping you'll return and staring at my poor tournament field. Just look at it. It's ruined.
Mr. Ritish, who had been quietly sitting on a nearby boulder eating a muffin, stood up and said,
"Welcome home, heroes. It is so very nice to have you back."
A broad smile flashed on his face at the sight of Terra, but it rapidly faded into a forlorn expression. He began to say,
"Terra, I never thought I'd see you again, I hope."
But Terra angrily spun on her heel and walked away, and Ritish never completed his remark. At that moment, a loud roar erupted from the cave opening, and Stavius heard a familiar voice in his head say,
"Stavius, dude, is that you?"